Welcome to another Steer Your Career podcast. Today, I'm really excited to have Amy Lynn Durham on our podcast. Amy Lynn is one of our newest coaches at Kadima Careers, and she focuses on spiritual intelligence, quantum leadership, edge walking, and we're going to dig all into that in today's podcast. But before we do so, Amy Lynn, tell our audience a little bit about who you are and what's a little bit about your background.
Thanks, Alan. It's good to be here. Who am I? What a big question. I am, period, would be the answer, because I'm coming here with a spiritual intelligence lens. Just kidding. I'm a former corporate executive that worked for private and publicly traded companies. And towards the end of my journey in that space, I really had some shakeups in my personal life that transformed me. And I had a little over 400 employees at the time. And I was in a very competitive sales environment. And I started bringing these connecting activities to my team because I really sensed they were burnt out and feeling isolated and lonely. And I really started seeing the power of seeing the whole human and each other in being successful in your career and in your work. And that's one part of my journey, was that eye-opening moment where it's, we don't have to have this unhealthy competition. We don't have to hide information from others. We can all come together and pinpoint our unique skills and really elevate each other through that. So that's a little bit about my former corporate life. I left that space because I was so passionate about that work that I went on a personal journey where I left that space. I wrote a book called Create Magic at Work. I put all of those field-tested activities in the book that I did with my teams so other leaders could grab it and use it as a foundation for creative connecting activities. Yeah, it's been quite a journey. Went to the UC Berkeley Executive Coaching Institute, got my executive coaching certification there. I started Create Magic at Work and really just re-injecting myself in the workplace in a new way. I've been through quite a bit. I used to say that I've seen it all in my old position, but I realized I should never say that because always something new and crazy would crop up because I was in retail. I operated over 90 retail locations for the telecom industry throughout the state of California. So they were AT&T retail locations. So no day was dull. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
And that's a big job, operating 90 AT&T retail operations. I'm sure, and I know you and I had talked previously about some of the challenges that you dealt with, but talk about some of the challenges that you did deal with in that job. Share with our listeners a little bit about the environment you were in and the situations that you dealt with and how you handled that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Where to begin? So just a high level overview would be challenges. I've dealt with mass layoffs before and having to implement those a couple of times. And that was a big leadership moment for how do I want to show up in this moment for others when we're doing this. The crisis management, we had a time where we were being robbed, armed robberies were occurring at quite a frequent level. I never thought when I signed up for a sales and a quota and a commission job when I was in my early 20s, never envisioned that I would be showing up for someone that was just held at gunpoint, but glad I was there to be able to do that for others and facilitate that type of leadership. Those are some of the more outlandish things that I've dealt with. Other than that, the day-to-day, helping employees feel satisfied, feel recognized. I've done thousands of interviews, thousands of job interviews. Oh my gosh. I've done a lot of detailed recruiting in areas that were really tough to recruit employees in retail. That was an interesting time running Silicon Valley, going up against companies like Google. I know we talk about Google at Kadima a lot, looking for people that want to get into retail sales and make commissions. So that's, I have a very diverse background. I have covered all those areas, HR, sales, recruiting. But overall, if I were to just describe it in one kind of overarching theme, it would all be connecting with people authentically and the impact that can have, the mistakes I've made along the way in not doing that, and also the realization of how powerful that is when I can do that. Yeah.
How are some of the ways that when you work with your clients, when you coach, of helping them connect with other people? So yeah, it's definitely a challenge, something that is a needed skill. Yeah. How do you help support people with that? What's some advice that you have in that department?
Yeah, so being a high-level connector is definitely one of the ways that you can really amplify your career. And there's so many different ways that you can do it. However, I'm going to add in another skill that I talk about with my clients quite a bit, and that's risk-taking. We can't be a really good connector if we're not encouraged to take healthy risks. And so what I mean by that is, let's say that maybe you're starting out on your career journey, or maybe you're looking to pivot to something different, and you have been so focused on your current position that you haven't taken the time to maybe spruce up your LinkedIn or network outside of just your team or where you're at. That can feel pretty scary. And the encouragement to risk take that I bring to the table is, how can you take a risk and reach out to someone that might be a mutually beneficial connection? But the key spiritual intelligent piece in that is, how can I do this in a way where I show up as my authentic self? And what does that look like? That's the edgewalker, right? The edgewalker is a high level risk taker. And the biggest risk that we can take is showing up as our authentic self in any space. It's a daily practice and a life journey, for sure. Because in the workplace, Alan, I know you've been in quite a bit of different scenarios. We tend to put on masks, or we tend to emulate what we think others want from us in the room. And I think that's a recipe for disaster, because one, it could get you where you think you want to go. It might get you that seat at the meeting table. But at the end of the day, when you go home, are you really going to feel fulfilled in your life? Are you really going to feel like I'm doing what I came here to do?
And that is a delicate balance. And I guess that goes into the edge walking. So mm-hmm. You talk about interviewing lots of candidates. I generally coach people of get the damn job and mm-hmm. do what you need to do to get the job ethically. But sometimes that means dressing as the job requires rather than how you normally dress, or maybe it's communicating in a way that might be more formal than you're used to. How do people walk that edge of bringing their authentic self to an interview? Because you're essentially convincing someone to pay you hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, ideally, to rent your services. You got to sell yourself, essentially.
That is such a good question. So I think it requires some self-awareness. You know, I'm not discounting the fact that we all work in these corporate systems. And yeah, we have to show up with professionalism and with leadership excellence, for sure. At the same time, when you show up professional and when you start shining your own unique leadership skills, that's what's really going to set you apart. I struggle with this because it's, yes, we want to shake up the systems that we work in and make them available to everyone. And at the same time, the only way that you're going to be able to do that is if you do get that job, if you are passionate about that. And the number one thing that I share with clients when they're in this space is, when you show up to the situation, like you just said, Alan, it's not all about them seeing if you're a fit for the position. It's also about you seeing if this company or this organization is a fit for you. And I think that we've heard that maybe before, but just that simple reminder really helps, because it puts you in an empowering position to be like, okay, like I might not like this place, but it takes you out of that desperate feeling. And it's, let me see if you're good, if you're a good fit for me and for who I am. And that little piece of advice opens up the door of empowerment and of showing who you really are to the interviewer, because you're going to start sharing who you really are because you do want to see if this place is a good fit for you. And as a spiritual intelligence coach, we operate with a bias, and that bias is that the universe is loving and intelligent, and that what is meant for you will not pass you by. And so if you sit in that knowing, then you can sit in this empowering space where I'm going to see if this place is a fit for me. And it shifts the whole energy of the interview.
I'm all for people interviewing the company and evaluating, is this a good fit for me and my lifestyle and my ethics and values and so forth. I generally recommend to our clients to go through the whole process, because you will learn things throughout the interview process that you might not know early on. You might have met with a dumbass on the team or been mishandled, and you might learn more that could be positive. And you always have that opportunity to say no at the end. And also it improves your interview skills, and also you're building relationships during that time. And when you get the offer, you don't need to accept the offer. And then I think is the opportunity for the candidate or the person to really do that effective evaluation of, is this going to be a good place for me? You'll know that money at the time too, because I'll make that offer. What are your thoughts about when someone should evaluate? And you may take bits and pieces all throughout the process, but I've seen a lot of people drop out of the process and opt themselves out of something that could potentially turn more positive if they pull themselves out too early.
They opted out of
the interview process, or like the consideration process of a new opportunity.
Really? Yeah. I definitely, if I hear what you're saying correctly, I definitely agree with you in finishing the journey of going through the interview process and getting the offer and everything like that. Dropping out before you see what's fully available to you is probably not the best thing to do, because like you said, at the end, you can always say no. And what came up for me while you were sharing that is nothing's fatal, right? View this as like, you're just trying new things to see what feels good for you. And typically, if you're a client of mine, we've flushed that out in the beginning. Like, what really aligns with my true feeling of what I want to do in this life? What really aligns with that? And could I see, let me share something with you. A lot of talk about purpose and why in the workplace and all over LinkedIn, like Simon Sinek coined, you know, what's your why? There's two things that can happen from that. The first is someone can get anxiety. That could be anxiety producing because they might not know their why. And like, oh, great. Now I have to have a why. I'm just trying to make a paycheck and pay my bills and take care of my family. Like, now I have to go on this inner exploration of what my why is. And then the other piece is, to me, what you mentioned is, oh, well, this isn't matching my purpose or my why. I'm going to drop out of this. So neither of those feel very energetically balanced. And so what we want to do is have an exploration of what feels good to us while we're standing on a good foundation of what we know feels good for us. So when we go into these spaces, even if this interview process, I'm start feeling, oh, I'm going to drop out of this. No, let's stay with this. Let's stay with the uncomfortable feelings. Let's move through it, because truly at the end, you can say no. But, oh, look, one of your core values for this season of your life that we talked about was giving back and mentoring others in this beautiful skill that you have. Do you see an opportunity for you to do that in this space? Maybe it's not the name that you were looking for. Maybe it's not the exact title you were looking for, but is this space offering you the ability to do this work that's the most important to you? Just using that as an example, and then go from there.
I think it's a very meaningful conversation or consideration that people need to have in terms of what they want to do with their limited time here on the earth. So you can choose to take a job or not, and that's going to be like 2 years out of your life, 5 years out of your life, and has to be aligned with your authentic self, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, I think we get caught up in titles, and I think we get caught up in even company names that we're working for. And I think at the core of it is, what is the work that you want to do that is fulfilling for you and possibly also for the greater good. Maybe sends that ripple effect out for the greater good. What does that look like? Names aside. And let's go look for that.
Who determines what the greater good is?
I've done hundreds of podcast interviews and no one's ever asked me that. I would say you, right? The person.
So probably different people have different perspectives of what their why is, going back to Simon Sinek, or what their good is. And perhaps if people can understand what's important to them, what their why is, then they can look for a path that maximizes their opportunity to get to there.
I'm coming from that quantum leader perspective. So the quantum leader makes business decisions. Let's go back a little bit. The ripple out to maybe your personal relationships, your family at home, then your communities, then the planet, and then humanity as a whole. When I say greater good, I'm coming from that quantum leadership lens. That can feel big. However, if we're making really wise and compassionate decisions for ourselves and for others in the workplace, that's one of the number one things that can eradicate burnout and really help us tap into living a life of inner peace and making those decisions even when we're under great stress.
I've heard you refer to the term quantum leader several times. It's not a term that I'm familiar with, and I don't think most of our audience is. What is a quantum leader? Is that something that you learned at your coaching certification at Berkeley?
No, actually, I'll recommend a book for everyone listening. It's a really great resource. It's called The Quantum Leader, and it's written by Dana Zohar. She's a philosopher and a physicist who has done decades of work in the spiritual intelligence space for the workplace. So she combines Western and Eastern business practices and also shares the power of spiritual intelligence from a faith-neutral perspective for leaders in the workplace. And the quantum leader, basically in a nutshell, skill builds in their SQ and operates from a wise and compassionate place. They're able to put their ego aside and view things from their higher self a higher percentage of time. And in that book, The Quantum Leader, is the quantum leader's oath. And the oath in that book is that the vision is that business makes decisions with the understanding of what the ripple effect of their decision is. So we take it beyond servant leadership. Like, I have a podcast, Create Magic at Work, and I started out 3 years ago asking every guest, what does servant leadership mean to you? And it was a really cool ending and hearing all of these answers. And then I took it a step further because the answers that I was getting were like, oh, I answer to my shareholders, or I'm customer service for my employees, and all of these things. And so the quantum leader takes it a step further. The quantum leader not only answers to shareholders and their teams, but answers to their communities and to the ripple effect their decisions have on the planet and humanity itself.
You referred to SQ, spiritual intelligence. That's another term that I'm just learning about through my conversations with you. I think a lot of my audience may not be so familiar with it. So can you explain the concept? Is that something that you learned at Berkeley Coaching School?
No, I'm a certified SQ21 coach through Deep Change. And it's a framework. The SQ21 is also a book written by Cindy Wigglesworth. She's actually a former HR executive with Exxon, and she was really intrigued by emotional intelligence and Goldman's framework of the EQI. And she was like, there's something more, which, by the way, Ellen, I believe is like going to be the next wave of the workplace conversation, is bringing like your spirituality to work from a faith neutral lens. There's a lot of chatter about it right now, but spiritual intelligence is like you get to SQ by way of EQ, by way of your emotional intelligence. I'll give you an example. If you compare it to the adult development theory, when we're in our early to mid 20s, that's the time, and I'm generalizing because we're all humans and there's exceptions, but that's the time where your brain is developed enough to have compassion for others. And so EQs, am I aware of my emotions? Can I be self-aware of my emotions? Can I have an emotional management strategy? And can I build connections with others? That's EQ, right? SQ is the next step from that. SQ is like that part, typically in your early to mid 30s, you start contemplating like, why am I here? What's my purpose? What's my why? Am I living in alignment with who I really think I am or who I want to be? And it's that sense that you want deeper meaning in life, either from connection to a higher power or higher self in that way. And then you want to start maybe leaving a little bit of a ripple effect for the greater good before you exit off the planet.
And you talked about the increasing chatter, maybe the trends on spirituality, I think without religiosity, I think you referred to in the workplace. How does that show up? What are some examples that are occurring in the workplace where people are showing up like that? I haven't been in a normal workplace since 2019 because I've been working from home, but I'm curious how that shows up in the workplace. What are some examples?
I think that the concept of spiritual intelligence is what's really starting to gain some traction in the workplace. Like, what is this? Because, and let's tie it back to what we were talking about before, the risk taking of being your authentic self in any space, right? I don't know about you, and I think this does go across the board, but most HR departments put the lid on talking about religion at work. Hey, we don't talk religion here, just because they were afraid of lawsuits or things like that. So I think my opinion, what has happened with that is people have compartmentalized who they are when they come to work, and they haven't been allowed to bring a part of them to the workplace. What happens with that is we possibly cut off creativity and innovation because we're not getting everyone's full self. The spiritual intelligence piece I love because it's a set of 21 skills and it's faith neutral that a leader can, it like brings the woo into a tactical, tangible list that someone can work on. And so it's a set of 21 skills and there's an assessment you can take and you can see where you sit in those 21 skills and you can skill build in those areas.
There's some examples of those skills. Well, there's 21 skills. I don't need all 21, but just a few.
So I'll give you like the big ones because I feel like these personally from the work I've done are like the overarching themes that come up. Am I aware of my ego versus my higher self? Who's in the driver's seat most of the time? Am I aware when my ego shoves my higher self out of the way and starts driving my life? And the ego is that place within you that comes from fear, defensiveness, protection. That's a big one. Some of the capstone skills that high level leaders work on are like being a wise and effective change agent. How can I be a true wise and effective change agent? You know, we see on LinkedIn all the time people have in their title, I'm a change agent. And I'm always curious like what they truly mean by that. And the deep dive to being a wise and effective change agent is definitely through the spiritual intelligence lens. Making wise and compassionate decisions. That's skill 19. And the final one that I love, skill 21, is being aligned with the ebb and flow of life. I think work-life balance is a myth. I think stressing about trying to achieve balance is ridiculous because that causes more stress. A big breakthrough for me was that, oh, it's just aligning with the ebbs and flows of life. And how do I do that? And the ultimate definition, my favorite for spiritual intelligence, is the ability to make wise and compassionate decisions and maintain inner and outer peace, even when I'm under great stress. And so those 21 skills give us a list that we can look at and work on. So ultimately we can do that a higher percentage of time. Yeah.
Well, I've learned so much about spiritual intelligence and quantum leadership. It's a different perspective, but it resonates with a lot of people. Which sort of individuals most, I guess, are attracted to this mindset, this philosophy? Are there people in like different industries, different sort of roles that you typically see? Because it's different than the workplace that I was in, but
yeah,
it's a growing space.
Well, it's definitely different than the workspace I was in too, right? So people that are attracted to this work are people that want to seek a deeper sense of meaning in life. And I think that we can have that in any space. And I think that it takes the courage of the leaders in those spaces to try it, step forward and do a little bit of inner work, see what that feels like. I don't think that anybody would shy away from wanting to maintain inner peace a little bit more through tumultuous times. And that's one of the big payoffs of working through the SQ21 and working with me and Create Magic at Work. And that's what I bring to the clients at Kadima. If you're asking me like a client avatar, there really isn't one, except somebody that wants to have a little more inner peace and make wise and compassionate decisions for themselves, first and for others.
Thanks so much, Amy Lynn. I have two final questions for you.
Okay.
What is one piece of sick career advice you'd like to leave our audience with?
So if you're in this space where you feel like you're looking for that dream job, I think the biggest piece of advice that came up in our conversation is get really clear on what the work is that you want to do and let go of the labels and the names. And if you need help doing that, reach out to us because that's what we're here for, right?
Exactly. And then the last question I have for you is, where can people find you? How can they support you? And how can they learn more from what the great insights that you have?
Yeah. Everything's on createmagicatwork.net. I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit under Amy Lynn Durham. And of course, I work with the Kadima crew as well. Those three places would be great.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Amy Lynn, for your time and your perspective and for your spiritual intelligence.
Thanks for having me. I hope we sent some magic to everyone listening. Yeah.